Thank you. All right, so real quickly, it's just a review. We were talking about why is it so important to know God, and you know, much less know God in the Old Testament. And so we've been looking at this verse, and you should memorize it. You know, this is eternal life. It's believing Jesus. Jesus said, unless you believe that I am he, you shall die in your sins. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son that whoever believes in him. But here it says, no, there's something else, and it's knowing God and knowing him whom he sent. And we talked about knowing is more than just having knowledge about. It's more of a personal relationship. And we saw this verse is very important, that in the gospel we find the righteousness of God revealed. Now, what is that phrase referred to? I keep asking it so it just comes right off the top of your head. God's plan or his way of making you righteous. He's not talking about his own personal righteousness, but God's way of making you righteous as opposed to man trying to earn his righteousness, because no man's going to earn it. And what do we learn in the gospel? Righteousness is how? How is it obtained? By faith. Now, that's this quote here, the righteous shall live by faith, and that's from Habakkuk. And so this principle of God saving people by faith, is it just a New Testament theology or principle? No, it's from the old as well. God's always operated this way, and that's why we're going back to the Old Testament to discover who God is. Yes?
So in the Sermon on the Mount, when you're talking about God's taking care of everything, don't be anxious.
Right.
And then you talk about
seek
the kingdom and his
righteousness.
Right. Same kind of connotation
as here? Oh, that's a good question. I'd have to think about that. In other words, his righteousness as far as make it yours or his way of making it. I think it'd be more of his own personal, but because that's the whole Sermon on the Mount. Unless your righteousness surpassed that of the Pharisees, you can't enter the kingdom. So he's talking about true righteousness now that you are saved. Right. It's a good question, though. All right. So when we look at that, we're going to see another passage in Romans is very important, because Romans, it's all about you're saved by faith. That's God's way of making you righteous. And we see that that's apart from the law. And because they had taken the law, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not murder, the sacrifices, the Sabbath day. And they said, if you do all these things and check them off, what are you? Righteous. That's what they were teaching. And of course, we know that's not the case. So you could come to church every Sunday, you could give, you could sing, you could do all those things. Does that make you righteous in of itself? And the answer is going to be
no.
And that's what Paul's arguing here. But apart from the law, the righteous God has been manifested. Now here's what's curious. It's been witnessed, God's way of making you righteous. There's a testimony to it. And where is that found, that witness? What does the text say? In the law and prophets. So it's not by the law, but in the law, you're going to get a testimony or a witness, like someone in court saying, this is the way God makes man righteous. And so we're going to look at the law that doesn't make you righteous and find that which shows that God makes you righteous by faith. It's embedded in the very law. Have you ever seen it? We're going to see it tonight. If we get there, even if we have to stay late, okay? All right, if they can stay up 40 hours, we can stay a few minutes later. So we're looking at Moses and the law real quickly. That when God called Moses, he says, I remember my covenant with Abraham. See, God is so faithful that when he heard the cries of Israel, he called Moses to go deliver them. Now, we called them. Initially, Moses has a lot of pushback. Because Moses humbly, and we might say he's just giving excuses. I think he's humble. He realizes his inadequacy. Who am I to do such a great thing? I'm slow of speech. And, you know, but God answers every one of his objections. And what was his answer? Always. I'll do it for you. Don't worry. And then I'll supply Aaron. He'll speak for you. Now, that's kind of important you understand that Moses, does he know God at this time?
No.
He knows who he is, but he doesn't know God. That's going to change through this deliverance of Israel from Egyptian bondage. as God is going to use him and work through him, Moses is also going to learn who his God is. Because he goes, I can't do this. And is he correct on that?
Yes.
He's right. And you might ask yourself, who am I to walk as a Christian? Who am I to speak out against something that's wrong? Who am I to intervene in someone's life? Well, the answer is, you're not qualified. But God in you makes you more than abundantly qualified. And when you know God on that level, you become powerful and bold. And that's what we see here. So he introduces himself to Moses, first of all, because Moses says, who do I say sent me? And God answered what? You say what?
I am.
You say, I am. And that's that word, again, what?
Yahweh.
And we'll just keep using that word because that's his covenant name. And it roughly means I am or I cause to be. He is the source of all existence and he lives eternally in the past and the future, or the present and the future. And so that's how he's going to introduce himself to him. And how do you see Yahweh in the text, at least the New American Standard? How is it represented to us? Lord, and it's spelled with
capital L.
Capital L, then small caps, capital O, capital R, capital D. If it's capital L, then small O-R-D, that's the word Adonai, or, you know, the word, just general word for Lord. But if it's all small caps, he's using his covenant name, Yahweh, okay? Just so you know that when we point it out. So now God's going to introduce himself to Moses, to Israel, to Pharaoh, and all of Egypt. And Pharaoh, first thing, when Moses gets there and says, Jehovah says, Yahweh says, let my people go. And what does Pharaoh say? I don't know this Yahweh. Is that a true statement?
Yeah.
I'm not going to listen to him. I got my own gods, and they're stronger than your God. So God's going to introduce himself to Pharaoh. Will that work out well for the Pharaoh?
No.
And so he's going to introduce him and send him all these plagues. And okay, and then he's going to introduce himself actually to Israel, because the first plague doesn't turn out well for Israel. Their burden is increased, and they complain to Moses. And what does Moses do with that complaint? He complains to God. Does he know God yet?
No.
But it's amazing his boldness, and I don't want to say it's being rebellious. He's just being like a child, innocent. Like, God, why did you do this? You haven't kept your promise, and now it's even worse than it started with, you know. That's the kind of the cry there that he's doing there. So that's where the Lord comes back and says, you know, I'm going to do this for Israel. And they're going to know I am the Lord. Now, here I got to correct myself, Blake, because you asked about this phrase, I am the Lord. Those first two words, I had to look it up to check myself, are the Hebrew verb, I am. And then the second word is L-O-R-D, Yahweh, which means what? I am. So one is a different word than the second, but the first word does mean I am, and the second one is that literal, roughly, the I am, or the being, the one that creates. So it's not the same word twice, but it has the same meaning twice. I am, what? What are you? The I am. So it's two different words, but yet the same concept. It's almost a play on words. I am, the I am. Yeah.
Okay, and now I'm making myself, my name known as Lord. Well, for most of us would think, wow, what is the difference?
Right.
And that same,
right.
In our language, it would be like the same thing.
Right.
And so.
And that's where I misrepresented my answer to you saying it's Yahweh, and it's not.
Yeah.
So I just had to correct that.
Gotcha.
Okay. So, but notice these words. I am Yahweh. See right there. I'm going to bring, I'm going to deliver, I'm going to redeem. Are these salvation words? They are. Now, this is a literal salvation from Egyptian bondage. Now, when you see God, he says, when you see me, the I am, interacting on your behalf and the blessings that come out of it, in other words, you're going to escape bondage, you're going to be blessed with riches, and you're going to be free. What is the end result of all that? It's in the text. That's your clue. You shall know that I am the I am. They're going to not just have knowledge of who God is, but personal experience. As they witnessed the plagues and the deliverance and the plundering of Egypt, they realized, what a God that has blessed us. And what did they do to achieve any of this in of themselves?
Nothing.
Now, can you imagine Moses going up before Pharaoh and pronouncing there's going to be a plague of darkness or of lice or of frogs? I mean, you try that. How stupid do you sound going up to someone and saying, you know, there's going to be darkness for how many, 3 days? Because how are you going to make that happen? You can't make it happen in of yourself. So I imagine at the first, there might be a little hesitancy, if you would. But every successive plague, does you think Moses gets more and more bold himself? Because he knows, wow, God is the I am. Yes?
Now, the fifth plague, though, the Egyptians couldn't do it.
That's right. They couldn't keep up. He dismantles their gods and everything. So then he says, I'm going to introduce myself all to Egypt. Because by this you shall know I'm the Lord. When he strikes the water, and then all these plagues, you'll know there's no one like me. You know, there's no other God. You may know that I am the Lord. So he's introducing himself repetitively by these plagues so they know personally who he is. So that takes us to where we want to go right now in chapter 14. Because after the death of the firstborn, Pharaoh says, okay, just get out of here. Take your people, go worship God. And in chapter 14, verse 4, Pharaoh's going to see them wandering in the land seemingly aimlessly. That's verse 3. So God says, I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will chase after them. And then that's exactly what happened, right? And then I will be honored through Pharaoh and all his army. This is very curious. Say, I'll be honored through them. And the Egyptians will know that I am the I am, the Lord, Yahweh. And they did so. So Pharaoh, when they saw him up against the Red Sea with nowhere to go, he says, this is stupid. Let's go get him. And they think they've got him trapped. And so they pursue after him. Now, when he draws near the Israel, they look, and what's their reaction? They scared too. They think they're dead. And that's reasonable, isn't it? Because on one side there's water, the other side there's Pharaoh's army, and they're mad because they just lost their firstborn, and every house died. You can imagine the rage they have, and they're going to take it out on who? These slave people. They're not warriors. So now notice the language in verse 13. We're in Exodus 14, verse 13. Moses said to the people, do not fear. He said that to Abraham. Don't be afraid. I am your shield. Do you remember that? I'm your warrior. I'm your king. I'm going to protect you. So he says, do not fear. Stand by and see the salvation of the Lord. That same kind of salvation language. He will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you'll never see them again. Verse 14, the Lord will fight for you while you do what? Now, isn't that something? Because we want to be part of it. We want to work things out ourselves. He says, you just be quiet and watch. Now, is there going to be something they have to do, though, with great faith? And what is that, Donna?
They have to walk between these walls of water.
They have to walk and obey. Now, is that a matter of faith, though?
Yes.
And would that be scary? When the water is separated, they say, now go. Okay. But they had to do it, but the Lord's going to do all this great work. So the Lord said to Moses, verse 15, why are you crying out to me? Tell the sons of Israel to go forward. Lift up your staff, stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it. And the sons of Israel shall go through the midst of the sea on dry land. And I'm going to harden the Egyptians, so they'll go in after them. Then the Egyptians, verse 16, will know that I am Jehovah. So that's exactly what happens. Moses stretches his hand out over the sea. The waters separate, and the people go across. And then the Egyptians say, well, let's take chase. And he does so. He caused their chariots to swerve with difficulty, and so they're delayed. And that's when Moses is told by the Lord, then in verse 26, stretch your hand back out against it. And what happens? The water comes back in. And it says, verse 29, but the sons of Israel, verse 28, the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen, even Pharaoh's entire army that had gone in the sea after them. Not even one of them remained. But the sons of Israel walked on dry land to the midst of the sea. And the waters were like a wall to them on the right hand, on the left. And thus Israel, the Lord, that's Jehovah, see it's small caps, Yahweh. The Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Can you see them washing up like dead fish sometimes do? The water, the sea shore was just littered with these dead bodies. And when Israel saw, what did they see? The great power which Yahweh had used against the Egyptians, the people feared. Now who do they fear? Not the armies anymore. Not man and what they can do. The fear is placed in the right place. It's respect, but it's Yahweh. And they believed in the Lord and his servant Moses. Now someone had their hand up. Yes. Yeah, you know, and God fought for them. Now, out of this, chapter 15, comes the song of Moses, because it's just natural. They're free, and they've seen such an amazing thing, and they've participated in it. They write, there's this song of Moses, and I just want to draw your attention to a couple of the verses. Verse 2, I will sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. Do you think this is, okay, now let's open our books to number 264 and we're going to sing a song. Is that what prompts this? Or is it a natural exaltation and praise to God because of what they've just seen? Have they been introduced who Jehovah is? Yes. Certainly. And because of that, this is just naturally just springing forth. I will sing to Jehovah, for he is highly exalted. The horse and the rider he has hurled in the sea. The Lord, all small caps, Yahweh, he's my strength and my song. This is my God, and I will praise him. My father's God, I will extol him. Now, verse 3, the Lord, Yahweh, is a what? A warrior. Remember he told Abraham, don't fear, I'm a shield to you. I'll be a warrior to you. The Lord, Yahweh, is his name. They now are calling him by name. Have they been introduced to who God is? And they have a personal experience with him. And because of that, they're worshiping him. Now, I don't know how you get from before Moses was introduced to Yahweh until after without going through your own sea. You know what I'm saying? Your own 10 plagues. And having the Lord deliver you from all of them and walk on dry land and seeing yourself at the end be, you know, delivered and all your enemies dismantled. If you don't go through that process, how can we sing that same song they're going to sing? You know what I'm saying? Because that song only comes from having walked that walk and come through that water. And being scared to death and now being more afraid of God than your enemies. But you're not afraid of him to ignore him and to run from him. You run to him now, don't you? And so, we're supposed to rejoice always in the Lord. Again, I say rejoice. And that includes, he says, rejoice in your sufferings. Because sufferings give us this relationship with God that you would never have otherwise. And so, do we embrace them? Yes. Are they hard? Terribly hard sometimes. Will you cry and weep and moan during them? Yes. Is that okay? Yes, as long as you keep crying to who? The Lord. And on the other side of it, you're a changed person. You have this calmness of soul because you know you have a God who is your shield and your reward. He is your warrior. That's neat. I can't preach that into anyone's life. You can't think it into your life. You have to walk with God and find that. Does that make sense? So, we're not done, but it's powerful when you find the Lord in the Old Testament there. Let me go through this. Now, I want to go all the way up to Exodus 19. What's the language for a covenant? Remember with Abraham, by the way? What do you do when you have a covenant? How do you... You cut a covenant. That's the ceremony involved. Remember, you lay the animals out. You walk through it. Let this happen to me unless, if I break this covenant. All right. Well, God's now going to make a covenant with Israel. And this language is going to be this type and any type of the New Testament. But we don't want to get too caught up in that because we're learning who God is as he reveals himself to Israel. So Exodus 19... They come to Mount Sinai, and that's where God speaks to them eventually. And verse 4, he begins. He says, "You tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I have done to the Egyptians and how I bore you out on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now then," and here's the condition, "if you obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you're going to be," and notice this, "my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. You'll be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you speak to the sons of Israel." So Moses came and called the elders of the people and set before them the words which the Lord had commanded him. And the people answered together and said, "All the Lord has said," that's Yahweh, "has said, we're going to do." Because they're enamored with who he is. He's their warrior, their deliverer. Of course they're going to say this. So he brings these words back to the Lord. And that's when the Lord's now going to speak the terms of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. But before we get there, I just want you to pay attention to these words. "I'm going to make a covenant, and this is an agreement between me and you. I'm going to bind myself to you. And in many ways, it's likened unto a marriage." Because God uses this language other places, that here's God, and who does he become one flesh with, if I could use that analogy? With Israel. And this covenant and the terms of covenant is what binds himself to them and they to him, because they said, "All the Lord has said, we will do." Now, what's interesting, he says, if you do this, you're going to be my possession among all the people of the world. Now, there's something in that verse you got to pay attention to, because Israel is special, but does that mean God has no regard for the rest of the nations and families of the earth?
No.
What does he say right after he says, "You'll be a people for my possession"? All the earth is mine. Every one of them. Now, when the promise was made to Abraham, through thy seed, what? Does God have affection and kindness for everyone who walks on this earth, or just Israel? No, everyone. So what is this relationship all about? Let's finish it.
Well, what he says, "Then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people if they keep this covenant."
What version are you reading out of? A special treasure. Okay, well, let's read it here. He says, "And you shall be a kingdom." And that's the idea of this, the covenant that makes you royalty. But you're going to be a kingdom of what?
Priest.
And you're going to be a holy nation. Now, what's the job of a priest? They don't know it yet, but what's the job of a priest?
Intercede.
So they do two things. Offer sacrifices for the sins of the people. What else will they do? They offer worship. And what are we in 1 Peter chapter 2? We're a holy nation, a kingdom of priests, that you might proclaim the excellencies of God. I want to suggest to you the reason the way Israel is very special, God owns everyone. He wants to save everyone, but he's using Israel to be a witness, to proclaim to the rest of the world, here who is who I am, and here's how I want to save you, and here's what I want you to be. They're not special in of themselves. They're special because of their job, and that's to be a kingdom of priests. They're going to be a light into a dark world. Now, did the Jews turn that around? No, we're special because we're special. No, they weren't. We're going to see that's not the case at all real quickly here. God's going to destroy every last one of them that quickly. And we'll say, what? And so there's their purpose. And through them is who's going to be born, though? The Christ, so he could save the whole world. But there is their purpose, and this covenant is what makes this relationship happen. And with it comes a huge responsibility of them to be a witness or a light to the world of God and who he is. Because the world doesn't know Yahweh, do they? They don't know him either today, do they? Your and my job is to be a witness to the world. When they see our good works, what will they do? They'll glorify him. Yes. By their, not necessarily by going to the whole world, but by their conduct and how they demonstrate God's blessing upon them. And everyone realized the God of Israel was someone great. And by that perfect marriage relationship where they honored God and he blessed them, the people could learn who God was. Only in that way. They weren't out to really to proselyte, even though they did later. They go over land and sea to proselyte one guy, right? Yes. Well, let's get there, okay? Just hold that, because we're going right there now, all right? So what does he do then? He gathers them before the mountain, and he gives them, in chapter 20, the Ten Commandments. And then we're going to see what Brad has to say. Here it is, in chapter 20. And when he speaks to them, they're so scared, they say, that's it, we can't hear anymore, lest we die. But what is God do with his Ten Commandments? He writes them on tablets of stone. And those tablets are called the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. See, it's called that right there. The Ten Commandments were the covenant between Israel and God. They're not for man today. It was their marriage contract. In chapter 24, verse 7, he took the book of the covenant. That's all the laws that are associated with the Ten Commandments. Sabbath day keeping, sacrifices, all that. And then chapter 25, he put it where? The tablets of stone. The ark, remember that in the Raiders of the Ark? It's called the Ark of the, because what did it have inside? The tablets of the covenant. It represented God's marriage to Israel. And where was it kept? The Ark of the Covenant. In the tabernacle, God's house, his dwelling place, then later the temple. Just want to see all that. It's all about a covenant, 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 covenant. Now, remember what we said? Apart from the law, no one's going to be saved. I mean, no one will be saved by the law, but God will save you apart from the law. But God's way to make man righteous is revealed where? In the law. That's where we started? Now let's see that now. Okay? There's going to be three expressions of grace that are found in the Ten Commandments. And you might say, I've never seen that before. Because God is always operating on the basis, the righteous shall live by faith, never by the law. It was never intended to save anyone, but it was intended to keep saved people, you know, a witness to the world and this marriage relationship. Now, so let's look at it. First of all, the first commandment, I am the Lord your God. I brought you out of Egypt, on the house of slavery. Commandment number one, you shall have no other gods before me. Because I'm the only God. I am. Second one, no idols. Third one, it includes it with it. It's actually part of two, is don't worship him. Because I am a jealous God. Visiting iniquity of the fathers on the children on the third and the fourth generation of those who hate me. Now we'll understand who they are that hate him in just a second. But God allows the consequences of their disobedience to fall upon them, and it's always never good, and to their children and their children's children, they'll suffer for it. Now, in this, I want you to see the very first act of grace. It's embedded in the Ten Commandments, because wasn't this an act of grace? I was your warrior. I told you to be silent, and I'm going to deliver you. I saved you. I am the God that brought you out of. This whole covenant is based upon the fact that God showed grace to them. Is it intended, the covenant, to save them? No, they're already what? Saved, you know, from Egyptian captivity. I'm using it that way. It has nothing to save them. It's because they're already saved. It's all about grace and how you respond to God's grace. All right? So where's the second one? Well, we keep going, he says. I show iniquity upon those who hate me, but here it is. Verse 6, in the Ten Commandments, embedded right in it, I show loving kindness to the thousands, to those who love me. And how do they show their love for me in this relationship? We have to get this. People say, well, do I have to do this? Do I have to come to worship? Do I have to? And what's the answer?
Yes, yes, yes.
No, no, no. You don't have to do any of it. But it's your choice. You want the iniquity visited on you, or do you want the loving kindness placed upon you?
Yes, yes, yes.
If you love him, you're going to, yes, can I do this? Please, Lord. You know what I'm saying? So when I come home and my wife says, oh, you're the greatest husband in the world. What can I do for you? She says, nothing, you know. She says, can I make you some dinner? And that's all right. Well, how about some steak? Okay. You know, does she feel like she has to do that for me? No, because if it's done out of have to, that's not a relationship that a marriage is supposed to be about. It's because I want to, because we love and respect each other. Isn't that what God's asking here? Now, it's interesting. My grace is going to continue to be thrown upon you if you continue to keep your part in this relationship. And your part is what? Show your love by doing what I say, because I know what's best for you. Let me bless you. Follow me. Now, we got to identify a word here, the word loving kindness. We've talked about it before, but I have to introduce it again. There's the word in Hebrew, and you go, well, that helps me, not at all. So here is the word in English. It looks like cheese, right? But there's a D on it. And so the best way they understand that they pronounce it, it's a guttural, like the German hard k, like ich. It's chesed. Now, that's hard for our English tongue to say, chesed. But so chesed is fine. It's used 247 times in the Old Testament. And it's part of God's very character in person. It's best translated in the New Testament by the word grace or mercy. Jesus said, go learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. And if we don't understand God's chesed, we really don't know God yet. And it's interesting because the word is hard to translate in a definitive way, because sometimes it speaks of kindness and mercy, and that's why the New American Standard most often translates it as loving kindness. The King James American Standard, mercy. Sometimes it's talked about faithfulness of God or covenant love. In other words, when God binds himself to someone in a covenant, there's this loyalty to them. And we call it covenant or marriage love. That I'm going to be faithful to you because I've bound myself to you, and in my character demands that of me, that I honor it. And what does he want from us? The same thing. And so when we understand this word, this steadfast love, sometimes it's translated that way. Sometimes it's called just simply loyalty, because it's loyalty that comes from this kind of relationship. When you understand, and I don't get it myself, that the God who created everything, the I Am, from which all things came, he says, I will bind myself to you, commit myself to you. And when I say bind is, I will take you as my spouse, and I will promise to take care of you and bless you. So when you cry, I will come running. Now, why would the I Am commit himself to the subordinate like that? See, he's the superior, we're the subordinate. Why would he do that? It should be the other way around, because you appease the gods, so they're not angry at you. You fall down and worship them. And God's, no, he's the one that's instigating the relationship, saying, if you obey me, I'm making this covenant. I will commit myself to your well-being. And that's why Paul says, if God is for us, who can be against us? What can man do to me? That's what Jesus asks. If we understand God and what he's saying here, is this grace or is this law-keeping? It's grace. It's embedded where, though? In the Ten Commandments. So why do you not use God's name in vain? Because you love him. Why do you refrain from committing adultery? Because you love him. And all the things he's done for you, the last thing you do is slap him in the face by hurting one of his other people. Why do you not murder or covet? Because you love him for all the things he's done for you. And how could you, again, cause him grief? And so that's what it means to love God. Now, here's the third one. We think this is, the Sabbath day, another commandment just to do. But he says, remember the Sabbath to keep it. 6 days you shall labor, do your work. But on the seventh day is the Sabbath of your Lord, your God. In it you shall do no work. And he goes on to say, who? And it's because God worked 6 days. On the seventh day he rested. The word Sabbath means what?
Rest.
And I would suggest this is the third expression of God's grace in the Ten Commandments. You say, well, you're going to have to make that case. Okay, let's do it. In the beginning, did man have to work?
No.
All they had to do is what?
Here.
Pick. Just gather, right? Why was work introduced into the world?
Sin.
It was because of sin. So what were they doing prior to the sin every day? What do you want to do today? Let's rest. Well, they had to keep the garden. They had a task, understand. But they didn't have toil by the sweat of their brow, did they?
No.
That came what? After the fall of man. And so it was rest, pick, gather, tend to. But then they sinned, and now they have to work. They have to work, and they have to work, and if they don't work, what will happen to them? They'll die. God used to provide, and now they have to provide for themselves. And God says, I'm going to give you some grace. You work 6 days, and it's all up to you. I got that. But on the seventh day, you rest, and you remember me. Well, what are we going to do? I'll take care of you. When they wandered in the wilderness, did they have that same problem? We're going to die. What did he do? Manna from heaven. We're tired of this manna. What did he give them?
Quail.
What did he tell them to do every 70 years? Every 7 years, I start there. Well, that's true. But how about the land?
They let it
go foul. Let it rest. Well, Lord, who's going to take care of us? Who's going to feed us? My Hesed will take care of you. You rest. You mean I can just take the year off and not till the land? Yes. Oh, thank you, Lord. I get to rest for a whole year. Do you understand? This is grace. And man says, oh, no, Saturday, I can't work. I can't make any more money and get myself ahead. And we've just totally turned it around where it's supposed to be a day of blessing. And you cease from your labor as a matter of grace. And we look at it almost as the curse, where the curse is what? Working.
Yeah.
By the sweat of your brow. And Saturday should have been a day of blessing. And now we don't keep the Sabbath today, but Sundays are almost equivalent. And yet, do I got to go to church? We don't know God when we ask that question. Yes. Someone had their hand up. Yes, Clinton.
Their shoes didn't wear out and their clothes didn't wear out.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right. All right. So it's interesting. Luke 13. That's Luke 13, not 3. Remember Jesus healed this woman who had the hemorrhage? And what did the Pharisees get on him for? Doing it on the Sabbath day. And it's interesting, the words of the Lord here. This woman, a daughter of Abraham. Oh, covenant, right? As she is, whom Satan is bound. Where did this curse come from? Satan, just like in the Garden of Eden, Satan set him up for it. She's been bound 18 years. Should she have not been released from this bond on the Sabbath day. It's a question mark. Some suggest the word should implies I had to release her on the Sabbath day. Why? Because it's the day of rest. She finally gets to rest from what? 18 years of bondage from Satan. And so what's he telling Israel? On Sabbath day, what do? Rest. I've saved you. Just give it up for a day. You'll be okay. I'll take care of you. Well, what if the rains came in? It's going to wash all away their seed. What did God say? No, I guarantee your harvest. You'll have a harvest if you obey me. What if the rains don't come and you're worried about it? Where are we going to, how are we going to eat? What does God say? I got it covered. I am the I am. You have guaranteed crops if you love me in this relationship. You with me? You just rest. Trust me. So, isn't that amazing covenant, what he has with him? And it's a picture of what God has with us spiritually, because we are now his Israel. And we're a kingdom of priests, declare his excellencies. Now, this covenant's broken real quickly, because when he's up there on the mountain, what do? Brad?
They're impatient. They create the golden calf.
Yeah.
So forth and so on. And
they break the
first one.
Well, the second, a graven image, an idol. So he says, step aside, let me alone, let my anger burn against them. I'm going to destroy them, all of them. But I'm going to make a great nation out of you. Why is he going to save Abraham, Moses? I gave it away. Okay, everything you said is true, but let me answer it. He made a promise to Abraham through thy seed. And what are all these Israelites? Seeds of Abraham. He had to keep one to keep the lineage alive. So was Israel special in of themselves?
No.
He's going to kill every one of them because they broke the covenant. They broke it as soon as it's established. Just right out the gate. Now, give me 1 minute. Is that okay? 2 minutes? All right. So Moses pleads. He says, remember Abraham. So God changes his mind about what he's doing. He says, okay, I won't kill him, but I'm not going with him. So then he goes down there and deals with them. Moses does. They have to grind up the golden calf and drink it, and many of them die. So the Lord spoke to Moses and said, you go. I'll send my angel with you, but I will not go in your midst. Is this relationship restored at this time?
No, it's not.
You're on your own. I can't go because if I go with these people, I'll end up killing them because they're so obstinate. They don't know who I am. And then Moses, I don't understand the gall of Moses, but he just stands right in the gap. God says, go, and he says, but Lord! Now, he's not challenging him, but does he know God now?
Yes.
What does he know about him? God's a God of chesed. And he says, if your presence doesn't go with us, don't lead us from here. Because if I found favor in your sight, you gotta go, please. I can't do this on my own. Is that true? And he knows God. And so finally God says what? I will do this thing of which you have spoken, because you have found favor in my sight. And the first thing Moses says is, show me thy glory. He renews the covenant. He takes the stones and Moses rewrites the tablets, the laws on the tablet stone. The covenant's restored. And next week, we're going to see God show his glory to Moses. Because Moses is so taken back. Like, really? You'll honor my word? You'll go with us? After what they did? God, I want to see your glory. He just wants to see God. He wants to know him more fully. We're going to be seeing that next week. You got to come back. All right.